as the original Kyaer did. Our leaders decided long ago that anyone claiming to be Kyaer be dealt with swiftly, drastically, and without exception. My uncle nodded and looked as if he wanted to launch into a debate, but the woodsman stopped him. "We are not playing games with you, Duke," Aeryn said with a sigh. "We have to bring the pretender to the clan council. There will be no negotiation on this point."
"If we swore allegiance to your clan, as you mentioned earlier, could we appeal to your leaders? Would you gift us magic to fight the elvens?" I asked the big man. He had just taken the last bite of the fowl and leaned back to look at me while he picked his teeth with a wet bone.
"I said that we gift warriors."
He smirked at me.
"You do not seem like much of a warrior."
"I will learn. Kyaer taught me a few things when we traveled." I lied a little. I had asked him to teach me how to fight, but it had just been an excuse for him to touch me.
"Don't say that name anymore."
The smaller man sighed and grabbed one of the roasting birds.
"You are completely ignorant. His name is cursed. His legacy is remembered by our people with despair. The real destroyer was killed thousands of years ago after a bloodbath of a scale that you could not even comprehend. Your man is a charlatan that has befuddled your simple mind with shiny baubles of mistruths and a colorful cloth of seduction. Forget you knew him. Forget about us. Take your uncle here and find a small farm in a village far away from this empress. Get a husband, raise a family, and die like the human you were born."
His voice had risen in anger, and he ended the tirade by pointing his fork at me from across the fire. His words reminded me of my mother's. They tried to tear me apart and bury me under a pile of self-doubt and acceptance of her opinions as absolute law. My whole life was made of conversations like this from her and Nanos. These words were one side of a golden coin that represented my life. It was ugly, unbalanced by the beauty and love that my father, uncle, Nadia, Graykin, and Kyaer had shown me. The coin constantly flipped around, and I had no control over which side landed. Except that I did, now. I told myself I was never going to listen to my mother again. I wasn't going to let her bully me. I was my own woman now. I had loved and been loved. I had survived danger. I had made decisions that impacted my life. I didn't need to hear these words from her, and I would not accept them from this man who did not even know me. "What is your name?" I glared at him, trying to muster the fierceness that came so easily to Nadia. My heart was racing, but I made sure my fear did not show in my face or voice.
"Jason,"
he said, and his face looked confused. "Jason, I am not a simpleton. I am the ruler of a kingdom that has almost 2 million people living within its borders. They trust that I will protect them from harm, and it is my duty to do that to the best of my ability. I am trusting in a man named Kyaer. He seems to be the only one who can and will combat this threat and save my people. You tell me that you wish to kill him because he happens to have the same name as someone who died thousands of years ago. I'm sure you see why I am frustrated and am looking for any solution to help my people." My heart hammered in my chest as I spoke the words. When I finished my angry retort, I crossed my arms and looked between the three men. I felt my head spin, and I was glad I was sitting down next to the warm fire. Their expressions were unreadable for a brief time, but then Jason nodded and sighed heavily.
"I apologize, Princess. Most of our kind cares little for normal humans. They might as well be a few rungs higher on the ladder than elvens. But our clan doesn't view life that way. We see potential in every opportunity. I should have chosen my words more carefully. You are right to be upset."
I saw Aeryn disguise his slight smile by busying himself with cutting more of the meat from the roasting pig. "Can you help us, then?" I asked without trying to raise my hopes.
"Kanath will need to be convinced. We are just his sword-bearers,"
he answered, and I sighed.
"But we can ask him to speak with you before we leave with the pretender."
Anax smiled. "Thank you," I said with relief.
"If you were in our situation," Beltor whispered, "what would you say to help convince him to aid us?" "We need tradable goods that will increase our influence with the other clans," access to minerals or a food stock that other clans can't get easily. Sounds like Aaron doesn't believe your world has what we need, though,
Jason said with a shake of his head and a frown toward the tall woodsman.
We have rich silver and iron mines at the foot of the Teeth Mountains, to the east. Our country also produces wonderful fruit that can be converted to alcohol.
He looked at Jason and Annex, but they raised their eyebrows and turned to Aaron.
Sorry, Duke. I have explored all land on this continent. While you are correct that Naya has many bounties, and in fact all the countries on this continent do, they are unremarkable compared to what we have on the other worlds, and Kanneth will not be so easily persuaded. Fuck.
Beltor ran his hands over his face and sighed in frustration.
We must speak with him when he returns. If he does bring Kair, then he might be able to assist me. There has to be something that the man wants besides this pretender or physical goods.
There is something,
Annex said with a slow nod.
What is it?
I asked. The large man stared at me and smiled in a way that made me uncomfortable.
Kanneth prefers his women with a certain look.
He leaned away and rubbed his greasy hands on his leather pant legs. He winked at me before continuing.
Perhaps you should do most of the talking when he returns.
I nodded and looked at my uncle. His face was set in anger, and I saw the muscles of his clenched jaw push out in his cheeks. I can speak to him. I looked back and forth between Beltor and the other three men. Then I realized that Annex was implying I offer my body to Kanneth in exchange for help. I felt my cheeks go hot from the sudden heat of the fire, and I looked down at my plate. I was no longer hungry at all. In actuality, I wanted to vomit. I felt the surge of panic that was becoming familiar, but I focused on pushing it back down and steadying myself so I could think and speak. The suggestion both offended and upset me, but as I calmed my mind and thought about it, I realized it was a wonderful opportunity, and our last hope. What was a woman for but a tool for men? I used to think that I had been cursed to be born a princess, since I would be unable to marry for love. Instead, I would be forced to join a stranger and spend my adult life living with someone I may despise, just like my parents. My father had delayed the inevitable for longer than he should have, but it wouldn't have changed the outcome. If the ancients or elvens had not invaded, then I would have been brokered off by this time. But even outside of nobility, there were very few women with the luxury of joining someone they loved. In every stratum of our society, women had to make the most prudent choice in a mate, and join someone that would better the situation of their family. Whether it was joining two kingdoms, as my marriage may have done, or joining two adjacent farms or rival markets, most women were not marrying purely for love. In the vast majority of households, love was probably not even involved in the choice of a partner. I had been naive to believe that the death of my kingdom would mean that I would be released from my duty and be allowed to join with Kair. Naya still had a chance for survival, and as far as I knew, I was still its ruler. I had lived a life of comfort and opulence off the taxes and work of my people, and I had trained every day to become their bargaining piece in a treaty with another kingdom to guarantee their safety. What did it matter if it was a kingdom from this world or another? It was selfish of me to worry about what I wanted, when a simple sacrifice could save the lives of millions of people. Kanneth likes women such as me. I looked at Annex and hoped he didn't interpret the anger in my eyes incorrectly.
Aye, princess. He prefers them on the shorter side, with curves, long blonde hair, and bright blue eyes. He has had very few lovers, none nearly as pretty as you, or as fierce. He likes women with fire.
Jason chuckled and Annex nodded.
I've known Kanneth for more than 20 years. He will be very interested in you.
The large man looked at me in a way that made me realize he wanted me as well. I will speak to him when he returns, then, I said purposefully. Then I stared into the ashes of the flames and was thankful that the direction allowed me to avoid my uncle's eyes. The coals in the pit had lost most of their bright orange color and were a dull gray. I told myself that all fires eventually burn out. yet people still need it to stay warm.
Chapter 16. The Obarni. It's old, Kyaer. Very old. Malik shook his head, swinging his mane of dark brown hair slightly. His mouth was a mix of excitement and puzzlement that I had grown to recognize over the years we had spent together. What is it made of? I scraped my fingertips across the odd surface of the stonework. It felt abrasive, like heavy granite, but there was a smoothness to it that reminded me of metal armor. I've seen nothing like it, Malik nodded, and the pieces of his armor creaked. The elvens didn't build it, though. I know that much for sure. How do you know? Alexia had joined the two of us during our walk around the strange stone structure we found on top of the mountain range. We were hundreds of miles away from the nearest elven settlement and fleeing from their gathered army. It was an army that was currently smaller than ours, but they had approached from the northeast side of the Highland Mountains and had a superior position. The risk of heavy losses was too great for my tastes, so we had fled south, down the mountain trails, and split our forces with the intent of regrouping in 2 weeks. Thayer, Gorbani, and Shlara had formed one group, while I stayed back with Malik and Alexia to head west on the ridges. Then we had found the structure. It stood over 200 feet tall, nestled tightly in a narrow canyon. The surrounding mountains sheltered the tower from wind in every direction, so that despite its age, it remained in immaculate condition. The stone, he paused as if considering, or maybe metalwork, isn't something we have seen on any elven tribal home. There are remnants of furniture inside, and they are made of fossilized wood that is crafted in a manner I have never seen before. My friend grabbed my arm. You need to see it, Kyaer. I can't believe the level of beauty and detail etched into the wood. Malik's grin was contagious, and I found my lips upturning slightly into a good-natured smirk. Any weapons? I asked. Bah! You and your weapons. This is much more important than an old crusty axe or sword. This was a citadel of learning. The furniture looks like it was once chairs, desks, and bookcases. I think it was some sort of advanced education room, perhaps one devoted to the study of the stars and the sky because of its height. Can we take shelter in it? Alexia asked pragmatically. Her hand rested on the stonework, and she slowly ran the tips of her gloved fingers over the odd, dark green surface of the tower. To my sensitive ears, it sounded like heavy glass paper rubbing against silk. We might be able to cram 1,000 inside, but it would be very tight. The structure doesn't have a basement. I looked up to the tip of the citadel. It almost seemed as if it had been alive. The pillars of stone wrapped around the surface and winded down to the bottom to connect to the base like ropey muscles on an arm or leg. Snow was starting to descend from the gray sky, and if I could have fit my 8,000 Obarni in the structure, I would have. The protected cover would have made the bitter cold night easier for the troops to endure and allowed us to set up a defense against our pursuers. Best to keep moving, then. Our troops were strong, and each one had the elements at their command, but weather on the mountain range could change within an hour, and even the toughest of my soldiers could not withstand a blizzard on these peaks without shelter. This is worth investigating more, Kyaer. Malik shook his head and looked up and down the citadel. Can I give command of my army over to you, while I keep 100 here to research? One of his lieutenants poked an armored wolf helm out of a small opening toward the top of the tower and signed with a gloved hand that they had discovered something. No. He opened his mouth to argue, but I interrupted. You and 100 of your troops are more valuable than any rusty trinkets that might be found in this tower. However, I raised my hand to the soldier sticking her head out of the window and indicated that we had seen the communication. We can spare a quarter of an hour to see what they have uncovered. Then we'll be on our way. Thank you, Kyair. I nodded at him and motioned for Alexia to follow me back to the main staging area of the camp. Wait, aren't you both coming? He tried to hide his disappointment, but my friend had always been at war with his emotions. All three of us don't need to be there, Malik. We will prepare to depart while you handle this. Alexia smiled and continued her silent walk back across the sharp stones and ice. I was quiet, even in armor, but Alexia's boots made absolutely no sounds when she contacted the rough gravel, and her snake-embossed armor did not utter a whisper. I knew that if I had told her to investigate this structure, she would have torn it apart until it was a pile of sand. But since I had dismissed it as unimportant, she had no further curiosity about the tower. Come on, Kyair. Alexia can handle the prep. Walk through the tower with me. Pretend like it is 1,000 years in the future, and our ancestors have found an elven dwelling. They would be curious as to how our race was freed from oppression and would want to study all the artifacts inside. He cracked his charming smile and winked at me. I couldn't help but smile back and nod. The thought of our enemies being reduced to dust and fables brought joy to my heart, so I changed my mind and joined Malik. "Take care of things, Alexia," I said over my shoulder. She was already a few 100 yards down the steep path of the mountain, but she raised her fist to let me know she had heard me. Malik walked through the short series of time-worn steps into the darkness of the citadel, and I followed. We could have jumped and climbed up to the window on the top floor easily, but I guessed that my friend wanted me to explore the rest of the structure, hoping I would change my mind. I made one final glance down the steep, jagged slope behind me. Alexia had signaled the troops to make ready for departure, and I saw the battalions tearing down their cold-weather tents with a quickness that could only be gained by thousands of repetitions. The inside of the structure was dark. The only entrance was the doorway we had just walked through, and there were no windows on the base level. A few of Malik and Alexia's soldiers carried small oil lanterns and paced along the floor and the edges of the walls. We really didn't need the light, since our eyes could see in almost absolute darkness, but the glow the lamps provided would enable the more observant members of my army to see small etchings that might be obscured in the stonework. The practice evolved from looting elven tribal homes that would sometimes have caches of fine metals, weapons, or art hidden in their walls or floors. The metals and weapons were a boon to the growing army. I always destroyed the art. "Anything?" Malik asked the closest soldier. "No, sir. About to move up a floor," the man answered. He looked at me and saluted. His action caused the other three in the room to halt their search and salute. "Carry on," I said. "No basement? That seems odd." The room was almost 50 yards wide and a fat oval shape. The walls swirled like a seashell down from the peak in a symmetrical spiral, as smooth and fluid as melted glass. "We can try breaking the floor." One of Alexia's soldiers tapped on the tiles with the butt of his hiking staff. It made a sound that could have been stone or metal. "Focus on the floor, then. We are going up. Come get us if you find anything." Malik's voice should have echoed off of the bare walls, but it did not. It was another mystery that he would love to solve. We walked up the stairs, and as expected, the level above us was empty save a few piles of wood. I wondered if they actually resembled furniture, or if Malik's description of them had infiltrated my imagination and influenced my observation. I decided that the curve of certain pieces resembled the back of a chair or the headboard of a bed, so I laid the matter to rest in my mind. The third floor seemed to have more scraps of petrified wood arranged in a pattern that looked like a series of tables. Malik pointed at the array while we walked across the oval to the next set of stairs. Originally, I thought this may have been an eating hall, but we haven't found a kitchen yet, so I believe it was a classroom, such as elvens had for their young. Perhaps there were other structures near this tower that cooked the food and then delivered it, I said. That could be. If we had time to dig, we might find remnants. His voice reflected childish glee. I doubt 10 minutes will afford you the time you need for such a venture. I smiled at him, and he grimaced. Would you rather the stairs be set up like this, with wells across the vast room, or would you just devote one side of the building to house the stairs? He mused for a second, his left hand scratching absently at the gray patch of hair at his temple. For construction, it would probably be easier to have the stairs on one side of the structure, else it would take too long to travel across the rooms, as we are, to reach the upper floors. But they designed it for defense, I stated, and my friend nodded in agreement. They could hold off each floor with a small number of troops and then fall back to the next stairwell. He pointed at the opposing stairway while he spoke. Whomever they feared must have won the conflict, since our mystery defenders aren't around anymore, I mused. Maybe it was our ancestors against the elvens, and our kin lost. Yet another reason to grind them out of existence, and another reason to investigate this site further, he added. We made our way up the third flight of stairs and arrived at the top level. The space was the same dimensions as the previous floors, about 100 yards by 150 yards in a rough oval shape. Unlike the rooms Malik and I had just walked through, this was filled with destroyed furniture piled into mounds of petrified wood. The ancient stacks looked as if giant men had thought about starting a fire and then abandoned the process before steel could be taken to flint. 10 of our soldiers were carefully searching through the piles of wood and were so engrossed in their task they didn't seem to notice our presence until Malik coughed. Then they shot to attention and saluted in unison. "Show us what you have found," Malik commanded the soldier who had summoned us while he returned her salute. "Over here, sir." The woman had intricate wolves etched into the metal of her armor. I recalled that her name was Elise, and she had been in the army for around 6 years. She gestured to one of the mounds of rubble that a few of Malik's other searchers were carefully unpacking. The three of us walked to the pile, and she pointed at the artifact. It looked like an oval stone, a little smaller than my hand, with 4 grooves on the top of the oval that could have been designed to place fingers. The surface was a greenish-gray color that was a few shades lighter than the walls of the citadel. Covering almost every free space of the stone was intricate writing, lightly etched into the rock by someone that must have had a chisel the size of a fingernail shaving and the steady hands of a master jeweler. "It was at the bottom of the pile," Elise said. "You have found no human or elven remains here?" I asked. "No, sir. Just the wood and this rock. We have not finished searching, though." I nodded and moved closer to the pile and its hidden prize. The writing was small, and the light in the top of the tower came through dimly, but I could read the inscription. "Touch and will cannot conceal the ideas left behind. Voice and song, hidden for long, can be revealed with mind. Wind alone is proof of those who strive to free our kind." "What does it say?" Malik moved behind me and put his hand on my shoulder plate. some simple rhyme. This is probably a child's toy, I said, my gloved hand wrapped around the oval rock laterally, and I handed it to Malik. He held it up to his eyes and then pushed his arm out with a confused squint. You can read this? He looked from the stone to me. I can't. The script makes no sense to my eyes. I glanced down at the artifact and gave him a smirk. Are you fucking around? No. He chuckled a bit and spun the stone around in his hands slowly. What does it say? I repeated the words aloud while he examined the oval stone again. He spun it between his fingers and let out a slow whistle that reminded me of a dove call. Then he tossed the artifact to Elise. Can you read the script? No, sir. She glanced down at it again. None of us can. She looked at me with questioning eyes. They were the color of a greenish ocean and framed with a dash of freckles. I recalled that under her helmet she had auburn hair. Weird, I shrugged. Another mystery that I don't care to solve. This device obviously does something, Malik said urgently. Can you give me more time to figure it out? He took off his glove and motioned for Elise to toss him the artifact. It landed in his naked palm with a wet sound like a stone tossed into a river. Sure, take it with you. It is easier to carry than this tower. We shared a smile, and then I turned to Elise. Finish up in here, and then return to the main. A sudden sucking noise from Malik's direction made us both spin to face him, hands on our weapons. My friend had wrapped his bare hand around the stone, and the script was now glowing and pulsing in bright blue. What did you do? You said something about wind, so I pushed air into it. The soldiers in the room drew their assorted weapons at the panic in Malik's voice and fanned out toward him. It was common procedure amongst our army. If you didn't understand something, approach cautiously with your team. In the next second, my friend gained his composure, and it became obvious that the rock was doing nothing more than making a low insect hum and emitting a blue light. He released his grip on the finger slots slowly, but the noise and glow did not stop. If anything, it seemed to increase in volume and brightness. Our forces move on Linan. As this message reaches you, continue your assault on Jai Likes. Press aggressively so that they do not realize our feint. I need more ovules. Sacrifice a score of your retainers and send them to me. The voice was a woman's, and the inflection reminded me of Shlara's. I imagined she was a strawberry blonde, with her long hair braided up in a complicated nest of knots and purple ribbons to fit under her winged helm. She looked younger than me, but her gray eyes seemed aged and experienced, like the old pewter mug that my father used to drink his water. She was beautiful, but something about her bothered me. The light faded from the stone, and the hum cut to silence. The sudden silence was refreshing, and I felt the muscles in my jaw relax. Then I realized that my whole body had been tense, and I exhaled slowly, forcing calm earth through my body. Fascinating. Malik held the stone in his bare palm again, as if he held some strange bug. It will probably take us a few months to translate the language. I've heard nothing like it before. He looked from the oval rock to me. If we could get more time to search this structure, there might be more devices like this. It's magic we have never seen. What's wrong? He asked me. You didn't understand the girl's words? No. I could tell it was a woman speaking. Did you understand? He already guessed the answer before he asked. Malik, Thayer, Gorbani, Alexia, and Shlara were my best friends, and we had spent more than half our lives leading our people in a war against improbable odds. He knew me too well, but he didn't know everything about me. None of them knew of Io Larothi. How did you understand it? Where did you learn that language? He realized that his men were standing around us with their weapons drawn. Leave us, he commanded. They nodded and flowed quickly down the stairs like water. Return in 10 minutes, he said to Elise. The woman saluted and followed the rest of the searchers. Her walk was much slower, matching standard pace, and I guessed that she wanted to eavesdrop on our discussion. Malik and I turned to face each other, but he waited a few dozen seconds before speaking. Elise could probably still hear us, but he whispered anyway. Where did you learn the language? Did your tribe use it? I've never heard anything like it before. I hesitated before answering, because I didn't want to talk about my past. Unfortunately, we had roamed our world for almost 15 years, and only encountered a few elven tribes that used languages different than the one we currently spoke. The words of those tribes were almost sister languages, with dialects that had mutated the skin but left the core body the same. We had been able to communicate with the human prisoners we had freed, and were more than successful with our interrogation efforts on the elvens we captured. I don't know, Malik, I said honestly. I didn't even realize it was a different language until you said you couldn't understand. I thought she was speaking our language. How can you understand it? His eyes furrowed in disbelief. It just made sense. So you can read the writing, he pointed to the smooth gray stone, and understand the voice that comes out of it. I shrugged at his statement. What did she say? She was sending a message to someone, telling them to continue to attack a place called Jai Likes, while she assaulted a place named Linan. Whoever she spoke to was putting up a feint attack. She also said she needed more ovules, and that 20 retainers should be sacrificed or sent to her. I shook my head and tried to clear the memory. Thinking about the message contained in the magic rock made my stomach clench. I guess I really don't understand it. I have no idea what Linan or Jai Likes are, or what she meant by ovules. Anything else? He had moved his gaze from my eyes back to the stone. No. I don't believe you, he said mockingly with his charming grin. I shook my head and sighed. I felt as if I saw her when she spoke. Her hair was dark blonde, maybe light brown, but bleached by the sun. Gray, hard eyes, looked tough and capable like Alexia or Shlara. She had on a winged helm and armor that was a silver blue with purple stitching on the leather pieces and embossments. Was she pretty? Think she'd like me? He made a sour face that forced me to laugh. Something about her made me uneasy, my friend. I don't like her. I waved my gauntleted hand across the decimated room. It doesn't matter much. She is long dead, along with whatever civilization she came from. So why can you understand this language? I don't know. Honestly. I have an idea as to why. He looked at me and smirked again. Then he turned away to pace around the room. It is because of irony. Irony? Yes. He gestured at the rock in his hands, and then the scattered piles of fossilized wood. Because you are the one person that doesn't give a shit, so of course you would be able to understand some ancient language and writing that could be a great cultural discovery. I doubt this is some great cultural discovery, I chuckled. Of course you don't. It's like everything else that falls your way that you don't care about. He stopped pacing and looked into my eyes. Not this bullshit again, I sighed and covered my face with my hand. The cold metal of the gauntlet was comforting. Have you talked to her? He asked. Have you talked to her? I spat back. Why the fuck is your love life my responsibility? Because she loves you and not me. Then get over it and move the fuck on with your life. What the hell is wrong with you? There are hundreds of women that want you. Pick one of them. You know I can't. None are Shlara. His face looked so pained that I felt a pang of remorse at my harsh words. My friend couldn't get the beautiful green-eyed woman out of his mind. I knew the feeling. I've told her to move on. You said you would tell her you didn't love her. That would be a lie. I do love her. I love all of you. This is why she can't let you go. He threw his hands up in frustration. Stop feeding her that bullshit about being with her after this war, about starting a family with her. She clutches onto that dream, and but it is true. I do want to be with her when this war has ended. I should have been angered, but I felt nothing but pity for him and complete serenity in my mind. When Entis had begun my mentorship, we had to fight through intense waves of anger and hate that overtook me and prevented me from progressing in my training. He taught me to relax my mind enough to make better decisions in times of conflict. If you really did care for her, then you would set her free. Tell her you don't see a future with her. I did what you asked. She didn't believe me. I crossed my arms and felt the thick leather strap that held my shield flex against the plates of my armor. My weapons were heavy, unbreakable, and had a tapestry of screaming demonic skulls flowing across the surface of the metal. The climb up the mountainside had been treacherous and long, so I had left the matching skull-plate armor at my tent. Instead, I wore a much lighter combination of plate and chain with skulls etched on the pauldrons. This armor was more display than actual protection. It would stop a light strike from a weapon, but little else. "You didn't try hard enough," my friend sighed. "We have work to do, Malik. Can you get your priorities straight?" I felt the anger seeping into my words, and my heart started to beat a bit faster. "This is a priority. I have done everything you've asked of me. My devotion to you and our cause is unquestioned. My army is strong and successful. How many improvements have I made to our magic techniques? How many elvens have I helped you destroy? Have I not contributed? Besides her, I am your best, am I not?" We stared at each other for a few moments. My friend kept his brown hair long, and it was tied back in a loose braid that fell down below his shoulders. When he had been given the power to control our magic, his hair had turned gray at his temples, something that had never happened to anyone else. He was a handsome man, with sharp features and a hawkish nose that complemented the charming smirk he commanded. He was right about his capabilities as a general. Malik was constantly looking at new ways to improve the performance and morale of his army. He pushed his warriors to focus more on harnessing the elements. His mages were an asset on the field, since the elvens often augmented battles with magic users that could hurl giant fireballs across the sky and slam bolts of lightning into the ground. Harnessing the elements to create or combat fire was a complicated maneuver that could leave an unskilled warrior dazed for a few precious seconds. During battle, this could cost them their life. Malik's troops were masters and invaluable. "You've done well, my friend, but there is more work to do." "I know. But my love for her has driven me insane. She only refuses me because of you. You have to help me," his eyes pleaded, showing a weakness that only a woman could produce in a man. "Tell her again that you do not love her. Tell her to be with me." "Don't be a fool. I cannot force anyone to love someone else, Malik." "Try harder," his voice filled with resentment. "You are acting like a child, not the leader of my army." I was angry now, and I heard both of our hearts start to beat faster at the prospect of an argument. "Stop." He waved his palms toward me. "You are the child, clutching on to her affections without returning them. I love you, Kaer. You are my brother and best friend, but it sickens me how you treat her." "I treat her as I treat Alexia, who loves you as well, but will never tell you so. I sighed and closed my eyes. I did not understand why Malik believed I could force Shlara to love him, or why he would accept that love, even if it did somehow work. How could he find happiness with her, knowing always that she would prefer to be with me? I'll talk to her again. I already knew what her answer would be, but I figured this was the only way I could end this conversation. I understood why Malik loved the woman. Shlara was incredible. She was my best general, the most devoted, ambitious, and hardest-working warrior in the army. She was brilliant and beautiful, and she was as dedicated to the freedom of the human race as I was. She was the one I should have been in love with. You'll convince her? I will try my best. Thank you. He smiled, and the tension in the air melted. Now, about this citadel. He flipped the stone up in the air and caught it in his right hand with a wide grin. Give me a few more hours, and I'll have a much better under... A screech sounded from outside. It was the unmistakable sound of elven magic descending from the sky in a lazy arch. A few seconds before the explosion, the roar of battle penetrated the inside of the old green tower. We did not speak, but sprinted across the large space of the top floor and flung ourselves out of the small window like thrown spears, scraping our shields and weapons against the edges of the stone as our bodies twisted in the air to thread the narrow gap. The ice-covered rock was some 70 feet below, but the fall wouldn't damage us enough to be of concern. For a few seconds, my body hung in the air outside the tower, and I got a glimpse of the battle below. The gorge that hid the citadel was 100 yards deep, in the left corner of a path that traveled east and west across the mountain range. One of Malik's scout teams had seen it when backtracking on our path to ensure that the elvens weren't doing something crazy, like traversing the north-facing cliffs in an attempt to flank us. Apparently, the elvens had traversed the north-facing cliffs and flanked us. In the distance, I saw a few hundred of Alexia's soldiers engaging twice the number of elvens, where the elbow of the road disappeared past the mountain wall and obscured my vision. It was hard to tell how many elvens had ambushed us. They swarmed like ants from the edges of the north side of the cliffs and descended like a golden ocean wave of weapons. A group of 40 elvens turned the corner into the ravine and sprinted up the slick, icy rock toward the entrance of the citadel. Elise and the 7 O'Barney who had been in the ancient structure fell back into the doorway for protection. The portal was just wide enough to allow 3 or 4 of our enemy to stand abreast, so I doubted my soldiers would be able to defend against 40 elvens for long. I pulled earth into me, filling my blood with its power and my brain with its energy. When I had first learned to harness the power, I had to be touching the ground to use it. Now I could call upon it at any time and release the magic to empower my muscles and senses or to spit giant balls of burning hate at my oppressors. The back row of elvens burst into orange flame like dried wood chips. They didn't even get a chance to scream as my fire engulfed and snuffed their pathetic lives from their golden armor. I felt my brain go numb and spin slightly as I pulled my knees to my chest and rotated my body backward. My left hand yanked at my mace, and the slipknot of leather came loose at my hip, allowing the heavy weapon of screaming demon skulls to be raised over my head. Then I fell into the group of unaware elvens 1/2 a second after my fire devoured them. My legs snapped out before I landed on the back of some asshole with a ridiculously large wreath of red flowers tied around his shield. His spine crumbled into liquid when I hit him, but before he could crumple to the ground, my mace shattered the skull of the warrior standing to his left. I was in the thick of the 24 elvens now, with enemies on all sides of me. Fortunately, I had surprised them with my sudden descent into their group, and only a handful of vermin were actually facing me, with their strangely colored eyes opened in shock. The surprise would only let me get a few swings in before they attacked, so I would have to make them count. I stepped toward the nearest elven, a woman with long silver hair braided back like a horse's tail. But before my mace contacted her ripe little skull, Malik landed gracefully behind her, removing the top half of her brain and helmet with a precise cut from his long blade. I shuffled to Malik's left and delivered a wide strike to the nearest elven. My opponent managed to get his right sword arm up in time to block the blow with his blade, but his legs and hips were not prepared for the force of my swing. My mace met little resistance, crushing blade, forearm, shoulder, and skull in quick tandem. Malik stood against my back so I could sense his movements, cuts, and blocks as he cleansed two elvens from our world and tied up three more that rushed to surround us from his direction. Elise and the rest of the search group were taking the brunt of the assault at the doorway. I spared a quick glance over my shoulder and saw them force a push out of the entryway, putting pressure on the dozens of our enemy that suddenly found themselves pinched between us. My look toward the tower proved to be a bit too risky, and I blocked a sword swing destined for my shoulder. However, I was too slow to parry a short spear jab from another attacker aimed at my stomach. I attempted to twist my body out of the way and realized that if the thrust didn't take me, it would punch through Malik's backside. The combination of plates and chain of this light armor did little to stop a thrust from a well-trained elven spear arm. The steel point tore through the metal, my stomach, and connected with the backside of the shield that hung from my shoulders. It missed my spine by half an inch, but the wound was enough to kill a normal human and take one of my ordinary soldiers out of the fight for long enough to mean certain death. I was hardly ordinary. My right hand grabbed the shaft of the pike to keep the elven from yanking it out. The two elvens that flanked him swung their sabers with the premature glee of victory, both blades foolishly aiming for my head. I squatted down low, ignoring the sound of my organs and muscles ripping against the blade of the spear while I listened to the ring of the swords banging together a few inches above my helm. I pushed out with my legs and embraced the pain of the lance, tearing again at my insides. The elven let go of his weapon too late, and the upward swing of my mace combined with the push from my thighs separated his skull from his shoulders. It spun off into the air behind his dead body, whipping the plum of his helm around like a spinning tail. "I heard shields are more effective if you carry them in hand," Malik yelled at me over the sounds of weapons and screams. "It saved your ass." I shoulder-checked one of the elvens to my right, pushing her away, and then slammed the side of my helmed head into the face of the one to the left of me. It made a satisfying wet crunch, and the man's legs gave out. I yanked the spear out of my stomach with my right hand and used the shaft to push on the shoulder of an elven aiming a swing at my skull. The knock caused his attack to go wide and spin him slightly off balance. Then my mace exploded into the backside of his neck and drove the life from his body. "Archers!" Elise's team had reached Malik, and there were only a few elvens left in our midst. However, 40 yards down the slope, toward the main battle, a trio of elven archers had peeled off of their main force and were pointing their nocked arrows in our direction. One of the remaining elven warriors swung her sword at me, and I parried quickly, so I might maneuver my body with her between me and the archers. The woman was fast and countered my parry with a quick thrust toward my blood-covered groin. I slapped the flat side of her blade with the staff of the spear. She twisted her sword up toward my right hand, forcing me to loosen my grip on the long weapon before I turned my back to the archers as the twang of their strings screamed in my ears. Two arrows hit the shield on my back with the kicking strength of a horse and knocked me forward a few feet. I heard the third arrow pass behind my head, so I was thankful for the helpful push. I was suddenly standing much closer to the woman who had just tried to stab me than either of us had planned, but I was quicker to act and latched my free right hand over the elbow of her sword arm and dug the butt of my mace in the same spot over her left arm. She was missing her left hand, and I assumed Malik had cut it off in the midst of sword play. It was a tactic he often used. I pulled her to me and kneed her in the stomach. Air exploded from her lean, armored frame, and then blood exploded from her face when I repeated the movement another time. I threw her body away from me and into the remaining two warriors behind her. She probably wasn't dead, but two men from Elise's team quickly dispatched the trio. "You okay?" Malik slid on the ice next to me. Yes, the archers had been killed by Elise and the soldiers that had been searching the floor of the citadel. My stomach began to itch as the organs and muscles healed themselves. In a minute or two, there would be little evidence of the mortal wound. I sighed and wished I could have been wearing my heavy armor. We hadn't expected to get caught by our enemies here, and I wondered how they had made it past Alexia's scouts. Looks like Alexia is holding them. My gaze had already shifted to the battle below our position. There are more to kill. I was running down the slope now, shield off my back and in my right hand. The thought of killing more elvens filled my mind and drove out all other worries and concerns. I felt more alive on the edge of death in battle than when I was managing the army or talking to my friends. "Fire now!" Malik screamed from his run a few feet behind me. Three massive streaks of blue flame sheared the wind around me, traveled down the slope, and smashed into the ranks of elvens a few hundred yards into the mass of armor. I jumped into the air, mace raised high, and landed into the thick of the elven forces again. Chapter 17. Kyre. I gasped and choked on too much air that I suddenly didn't need. My heart raced from the battle before I realized it had all been a memory. I was still sitting on the pillow in front of the Empress, her guards and generals, all of whom stared at me in a mixture of shock and disbelief. I moved my hand to my stomach and almost expected to find wet blood from a hole the spear had left in me. I sighed when I only felt the thin cloth of the green tunic Virnine had given me a few hours earlier. "Pretender," the voice sounded deep and gravelly. I turned to my right to see three new additions to the dinner. The man seated in the middle drew my attention first. He wore his light brown hair braided up and tied at the top with a knot of suede and hawk feathers. His skin was tan and rough, his face handsome and wide. In fact, everything about him was stocky and muscular. His chest could have doubled for a small horse's, and his arms were layered with slabs of muscles thicker than my thighs. He wore tan leather pants and a sleeveless tunic that was only a few shades off from his skin. The hide was decorated with blue embroidery of bear shapes standing as if ready to attack. Beads of blue and green glass hung from leather strips on the ties of his clothes and gave color to the tanned garments. His broad face and muscular stature reminded me of Thayer, although this man was far more handsome than my old friend. But he was unmistakably O'Barney. "You must be Kaneth," I stated. His eyes narrowed as he weighed me. Their light blue color was an interesting contrast to his dark skin. His right hand rose to point at me, and I noticed a pair of bear tattoos engraved on his shoulder. You looked asleep, yet you were speaking. I grow bored easily, especially around elvens. He nodded, but it was apparent I hadn't satisfied his question. The woman sitting to his left glared at me. Her hair was dark black, braided and tied up high as Kanath's, but with white feathers decorating it. Like Kanath, she wore leather decorated with the same color beads and embroidery. She also had the bear tattoo on her bare shoulder. "What is Linan?" the man sitting to Kanath's right said. He had blonde hair, shaved close to his skull on the sides, with a long mane braided up in the middle. A few of the elvens in the half-circle shifted in their seats slightly when he asked the question. I turned to look at the Empress and was surprised by the expression of concern that briefly passed over her face. "I've heard the word before, but do not know what it means." "You were repeating it," Kanath said. "I doubt that. Everyone here in this tent has been sitting for the last 5 minutes, listening to you repeat it with your head bowed down as if you kneeled in front of a clan leader," the woman next to Kanath growled. Her voice was deep and rugged, like Kanath's. "I do not remember," I shrugged. "Regardless, you have been accused of using the name of our betrayer," Kanath spoke again. "Is this true?" "I use the name because it is mine." Yilamar shot me with a glare. "I will bring you to the council for judgment. We will leave at once." Kanath rose from his seat. "No," I said, as I turned my head away from him and found my wine. The glass was currently full, so I set about draining it in one quick swallow and then nodding to my elven attendant to refill it. "You do not have a choice, pretender." It didn't sound as if my response had bothered him at all. "There are plenty of choices. I am choosing to have dinner with Talaxthi and her generals." I turned to the Empress. "What course are we on?" "We will take you by force, if necessary." Kanath's dark voice sounded like wind echoing off of a mountainside, but he didn't seem angry. "That is a nice story," I mocked with a sigh. The artichoke was half eaten on the plate in front of me, and I grabbed a leaf, dipped it in some of the sauce, and ate it. The vegetable had long since gone cold. "Or I could threaten someone you care for," Kanath's voice edged toward anger. "Such as?" I turned to look at the trio. Kanath still sat back on the pillow provided for his ass. The man to his side had a stupid smile on his face and his muscular arms crossed. The woman's face was red, and an angry vein pulsed on her forehead. Somehow, the hot emotion made her more attractive. "I have a young blonde girl and her uncle. Apparently, they are the rulers of this kingdom." My stomach knotted, and a thousand questions sped through my brain. "How did you acquire them?" Talaxthi asked nonchalantly. "They were already destined for this city. They had an escort of your personal retainers, but I convinced them to leave the two in our care." The Empress nodded. She made a slight smile toward her new guest. I noticed Virnine had moved toward the rear of the pavilion and almost disappeared behind the curtain. "Come with us, and no harm will befall them." He looked back at me. I would have thought that he was lying, but I knew the tell patterns of a human heart. Kanath did have Jesme and Beltor. "The pretender is my guest, Kanath. He has committed to stay for the next few days and give us assistance in this world." Talaxthi gave me a cat-like smile that left no doubt in my mind as to what would happen if I decided to leave. My game suddenly became more difficult. If I went with Kanath, I could probably kill them all when I got to Jesme. Then we would figure out how to get back to Nadia's army. I might be able to circle around Naya and reach them before they made it here. I could guess at their possible location, given the route from Fisherman's Gorge and Naya's capital, but Islata would make quicker time to Nadia on a direct path. Is the pretender your prisoner here? The man to Kanath's right asked. Of course not. He is free to go whenever he wishes, Alatoricht answered for his empress. Then the pretender should make the choice that results in less death, the raven-haired woman said with a growl. The tent grew silent as all eyes turned back to me. I searched my imagination for an answer, but the